That was not only his oldest memory, but the only one he had of his childhood. The other one, that of an old man with an old-fashioned vest and a hat with a brim like a crow's wings, who told him marvelous things framed in a dazzling window, he was unable to place in any period. It was an uncertain memory, entirely devoid of lessons or nostalgia, the opposite of the memory of the executed man, which had really set the direction of his life, and would return to his memory clearer and clearer as he grew older, as if the passage of time were bringing him closer to it. Úrsula tried to use José Arcadio II to get Colonel Aureliano Buendía to give up his imprisonment. "Get him to go to the movies," she said to him. "Even if he doesn't like the picture, at least he'll breathe a little fresh air." But it did not take her long to realize that he was as insensible to her begging as the colonel would have been, and that they were armored by the same impermeability of affection. Although she never knew, nor did anyone know, what they spoke about in their prolonged sessions shut up in the workshop, she understood that they were probably the only members of the family who seemed drawn together by some affinity. The truth is that not even José Arcadio II would have been able to draw the colonel out of his confinement. The invasion of schoolgirls had lowered the limits of his patience. With the pretext that his wedding bedroom was at the mercy of the moths, in spite of the destruction of Remedios's appetizing dolls, he hung a hammock in the workshop, and then he would leave it only to go into the courtyard to take care of his necessities. Úrsula was unable to string together even a trivial conversation with him. She knew that he did not look at the dishes of food, but would put them at one end of his workbench while he finished a little fish, and it did not matter to him if the soup curdled or if the meat got cold. He grew harder and harder ever since Colonel Gerineldo Marquez refused to back him up in a senile war. He locked himself up inside himself, and the family finally thought of him as if he were dead. No other human reaction was seen in him until one October 11th, when he went to the street door to watch a circus parade. For Colonel Aureliano Buendía, it had been a day just like all of those of his last years. At 5 o'clock in the morning, the noise of the toads and crickets outside the wall woke him up. The drizzle had persisted since Saturday, and there was no necessity for him to hear their tiny whispering among the leaves of the garden, because he would have felt the cold in his bones in any case. He was, as always, wrapped in his woolen blanket and wearing his crude cotton long drawers, which he still wore for comfort, even though because of their musty, old-fashioned style, he called them his goth drawers. He put on his tight pants, but did not button them up, nor did he put the gold button into his shirt collar, as he always did, because he planned to take a bath. Then he put the blanket over his head like a cowl, brushed his dripping mustache with his fingers, and went to urinate in the courtyard. There was still so much time left for the sun to come out that José Arcadio Buendía was still dozing under the shelter of palm fronds that had been rotted by the rain. He did not see him, as he had never seen him, nor did he hear the incomprehensible phrase that the ghost of his father addressed to him as he awakened, startled by the stream of hot urine that splattered his shoes. He put the bath off for later, not because of the cold and the dampness, but because of the oppressive October mist. On his way back to the workshop, he noticed the odor of the wick that Santa Sofia de la Piedad was using to light the stoves, and he waited in the kitchen for the coffee to boil so that he could take along his mug without sugar. Santa Sofia de la Piedad asked him, as on every morning, what day of the week it was, and he answered that it was Tuesday, October 11th. Watching the glow of the fire as it gilded the persistent woman who neither then nor in any instant of her life seemed to exist completely, he suddenly remembered that on 1 October 11th in the middle of the war, he had awakened with the brutal certainty that the woman with whom he had slept was dead. She really was, and he could not forget the date because she had asked him an hour before what day it was. In spite of the memory, he did not have an awareness this time, either of to what degree his omens had abandoned him, and while the coffee was boiling he kept on thinking out of pure curiosity, but without the slightest risk of nostalgia, about the woman whose name he had never known, and whose face he had not seen because she had stumbled to his hammock in the dark. Nevertheless, In the emptiness of so many women who came into his life in the same way, he did not remember that she was the one who, in the delirium of that first meeting, was on the point of foundering in her own tears, and scarcely an hour before her death had sworn to love him until she died.